Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 25th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me this week, welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everyone. Hello, David.
Tim, welcome back to the show. Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, big show tonight. We've got a ton of topics in our own right. I mean, we can't even hope to hopefully get through them all, but we're going to talk about the presidential race. We're also going to talk about if we could sum up some of these candidates in one word, because they did this in a Pew Research poll. We're going to do our own, talk about that. But we've got three guests, really. Will and Nate from Naturally Blue in Arkansas are going to come on the show. They actually were featured in New York Times this week about the work they're doing in Arkansas, and they may want to expand that further out because they've been pretty successful. They're going to join us in our second half hour, and then here in a few minutes, Eric Gray, a frequent guest who's the communications director of the Democratic Party, is going to talk about how all of our home state, Georgia, got a very, very sad designation as the most corrupt state government in America. You know, I'm one of the biggest boosters you'll find of the state of Georgia. Never lived anywhere else in my life, and that is something I am not proud of and happy about. And, of course, I want to try to fix it, but we'll talk about maybe some of the roots of that problem. And, of course, it has a little to do with the Republican Party. But the presidential race, it was in Illinois, and things went good for Mitt Romney, and then it moved to Louisiana, and the trend continued. It looked bad again for Mitt Romney, with Rick Santorum almost winning 2-1, and that's without Newt Gingrich's votes. You know, Tim, Mitt loves his cheesy grits at the Doubletree and saying y'all now, but why are these Southern Republicans not connecting with Mitt Romney?
Well, it ain't just the Southern Republicans, it's the Heartland Republicans, too, out in the Midwest, if you look at the political map at what's been going on. The thing is, people need to remember this. All these states that Santorum is winning, the Republicans are going to win those states anyway in November. I don't know by what margin. But you win your state by one vote, you get all the electoral votes. So Romney does have a connection problem with the most conservative and evangelical voters. But he's still going to be the nominee, and I think his campaign feels that these voters will come out in the fall to vote against the president. That remains the course to be seen.
Yeah, but usually in these presidential races, you have one primary leads to momentum for the next primary, but it's almost like dueling turns. It's like, hey, it's my turn, it's your turn. It's this weird shifting momentum. Catherine, can you recall a chance where somebody will win and get no momentum off of it? It's almost like they're campaigning on dual tracks.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me. And I think that it's, you know, sort of Mitt Romney's, it's not surprising that he would be running on dual tracks because he sort of has, you know, dual opinions on things. And, you know, maybe it depends on what he said in Illinois versus what he said in Louisiana. I think that, I think Tim's right, you know, those states will vote for a Republican. But will they bring their friends and family with them to the polls? Will they, you know, drum up support for the Republican nominee if it's not someone that they are particularly fond of? I think that's the question. And I think in this election year, that's going to be important on both sides.
Yeah, and the money issue, I mean, that is so huge because the more and more, the longer and longer this thing drags out, that is dollars Mitt Romney has to spend. You know, it's force and donors that their money may go now in the primary to particularly Mitt Romney could go some to, I'm sorry, Rick Santorum could go to Newt Gingrich, and those people give that money away to him. And, you know, some of these donors have deep pockets, and they'll give again and max out for Mitt Romney. But some may just be like, I've given enough to politics already this year. So I can't imagine that he ain't going to feel some money impact down the road. Well, let's real quickly transition over to, as we alluded to, the report done that showed Georgia as the 50 or the most politically corrupt state. I guess we'd be 50th in, you know, open good government, if you will. And joining us to talk about that is Communications Director of the Democratic Party of Georgia, Eric Gray. Welcome back, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, doing good. Glad to have you again. Eric, I tell you what, the last time we were on, that episode has been our highest rated show over the past year. So if you're the one bringing the ratings in, we need to have you even more than we do.
Well, I'm sure it's all because of Tim. It's the magic that Tim brings, I'm sure. So I appreciate y'all and your hard work, and especially you, Tim, for bringing the ratings for everyone.
It'd be the combination. It has to be the combination. Every week. Well, this corruption story, the day it came out, it got some play. And the Savannah Morning News, when I actually clicked on it to try to find some more research to read further about it, I saw more there about it. But it doesn't seem to be getting the play that it should. Why has more people not latched on to this as a problem?
Well, you know, I'll agree with that, and I'll tell you what one of the legislators down at the Gold Dome told me. We were discussing this before this report ever came out. We were discussing the sad and sorry state of ethics in the state of Georgia, and this is what a legislator told me, which was people in Georgia don't care about ethics. And I don't want to assume that that's true or false. I don't know, but there's a feeling down at the Gold Dome, at least, that Georgia citizens, everyday, ordinary voting citizens, this is not what they're concerned about. And in actuality, stuff like this does, you know, greatly affect our lives and the representation that we get out of Atlanta.
Yeah. Eric, Catherine and I and Tim, too, we were all discussing this before the show went on. And Catherine, of course, had what people will say is the counterargument. She's playing devil's advocate. I'm going to let her frame a question next about that and why, you know, why it isn't true about this group that did the study. Catherine, if you kind of know where I'm going, if you'll ask a question.
Yeah. Hey, Eric. Good to see you.
Hey Catherine. How are you?
Good. So I have admitted in the past on the show that I listen to, you know, right-wing radio. I listen to 750 AM occasionally in my adventures out on the highways and byways of Atlanta. And I heard a little bit on, I guess, whenever the day this story came out, and they were saying that this was a left-wing organization that did this study. I think it was Sean Hannity. And, you know, it doesn't have any validity because they're just a bunch of left-wingers and they're always going after Republican states and blah, blah, blah. I didn't actually take any time to look into that except, you know, very briefly. Part of the sponsors of the study were Public Radio International, which I would not say is a left-wing organization. But have you heard any spin on that?
No, I have heard that that's kind of what they're claiming, that, you know, it's a crazy left-wing conspiracy. There's a couple things that are wrong with that. First of all, this report graded all 50 states, okay? And if you look and try and judge which ones are Republicans and which ones are Democrats and who's at the top and who's at the bottom, you'll see, obviously, that Georgia is 50th out of 50. That's horrible for Republicans, horrible for all Georgia citizens. But it's kind of a mixed mash of different states. I mean, there's several Republicans that are up there, but heck, there's some Democratic states that are up there as well. Now, when you dive deeper into the data and see how they compiled it, it was compiled by reporters that live in each one of these 50 states. One of them here is Jim Walls, who's worked for the AJC for many years. And Jim Walls has gone after Republicans and Democrats with a fervor when he's thought that they've done something wrong. And you can just pull up the archives of him going after Democrats as well as Republicans. He is a very respected investigative reporter. And so I just think it's a it's a smoke screen to try and get people to change the idea and change the fact that that our ethics here in the state are horrible, and they simply don't want to discuss that.
I agree. I mean, I think that is it's a distraction.
Sure, absolutely.
From the facts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Tim, ask a question on this topic, and we'll keep moving through.
Eric, you would think that this would be just a humongous story in the media, and yet you are really hearing not much about it at all. Why is that?
Well, you know, there's some important people that need to bring this up more. There's some people who have bigger megaphones than I have or than a lot of people have that need to shine a flashlight on this stuff. Now we've done a little bit at the Democratic Party of Georgia. We brought this up a couple times. I've called a couple reporters about it and tried to talk to them. And the overwhelming idea is that, you know, we've got a governor that we elected into office 2 years ago that still has 7 outstanding ethics investigations against him. And some of these charges are financial mismanagement, you know, in the order of 10 times what's allowed by law. And he's got this repeatedly over and over and over again, from shady business dealings to weird financial relationships with his chief of staff and his daughter and all this stuff that may or may not be breaking laws, but we don't know because we can't get it investigated. And people have become accustomed to that. They're fine with that. So I think there's just a malaise that may have started with Deal, but probably started much earlier than that, in that Georgia just doesn't seem to be focused on these things, and it's such a tremendous thing that we need to try and correct. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to hear what you guys think. Why doesn't the media cover this? I really don't know.
That's a good question.
That's why we bring up a lot of these things, because we're just kind of confused as to why it isn't brought up more. I mean, obviously, we would love to see it where there's enough money at the party level where we could actually run campaign ads. I mean, while we should be getting a lot of earned media, but when it's not there enough, we might have to put it in front of people's faces. I mean, obviously, the local news is a lot of, you know, fires and rapes and just stuff that is so tragic to the people that affects, but really is not substantial all the time to everybody's life, like things like this would be. So I think that's part of the problem as well, on the television end of things. And, of course, radio, it's not reporting, it's opinion, like the Sean Hannity show.
Catherine
was mentioning. And then print did bring it up. I mean, we can't really lay the problem with print media because they did talk about it. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of a breakdown, if you will. One I wanted to ask you about also, Eric, was they had a lot of different category ratings here, if you will, you know, different grades, Fs and Ds. To the people of Georgia, which one of those categories would you say is the most problematic?
Well, I mean, you're right. They do have, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, probably more categories. And I really think that the one that I'd be most worried about is one that they call the Ethics Enforcement Agencies, where we got an F on that. Now, that doesn't sound important. There's probably more important things on that list. But the Ethics Enforcement Agency, giving it an F, means that all of the other laws that can be broken are not being regulated. We have actually an enforcement agency that has a lot of, you know, fairly decent laws on the books to try and prevent these ethics reforms or prevent ethics mistakes from happening. But there's absolutely no compliance or enforcement. In fact, they've been trying to hire a leader of the State Ethics Commission for the last several months, can't find anyone who wants to do the job. The previous person was, some people say she was fired, some people say she was let go or quit, but her pay was reduced 40% because she wanted to introduce subpoenas onto Governor Deal. People were trying to protect Governor Deal and got rid of her. The chief investigator several months ago was let go, completely just let go, because once again they were investigating Nathan Deal and some of his ethics dealings, and you know, someone in high place are trying to protect him. So I think when you look at that report card, out of all the things, if you look at the enforcement agency getting an F, that is indicative of all of the other categories being like the Wild West and just people getting away with stuff, and you'll never know about it because we don't have a referee in this particular game.
Well, and also, I mean, if you have no enforcement, then there's nothing, there's no incentive to behave.
Sure.
You know, so if they, especially when they know that there's nothing, there's no way for these rules to be enforced, then it makes it a lot easier to break them because they figure, well, it's not going to matter. Nobody's going to catch me.
Right. So something that's a D right now winds up becoming an F because you don't have anyone to enforce it anyway. So, you know, why even bother? I talked to a person over there at the commission not very long ago about some of Nathan Deal's stuff and asking him about these ethical investigations that come from the 2010 campaign. And the person who answered the phone over there and talked with me pretty much admitted that, yeah, some of these charges are over 2 years old and have not yet been investigated. Think about all the other charges from other legislators or other people in high positions that are accused of having done something that's illegal or wrong or unethical. If we can't investigate the highest officer in the state, there's no chance we're ever going to get down to the state house level.
Yeah. Well, I guess regarding some of these other issues going on, there was a tax plan that was passed this past week, and it also got almost no coverage. There just was, I mean, it was a blurb in the paper. You know, it was on the front page. Kind of dropped in there, and people didn't even know what was happening. And then within just a day or two, it had passed at least one chamber of the House. What
sure.
can you tell us about this, and is this something that Georgia citizens should be outraged about, or kind of break it down for us?
Well, you know, I don't know the specifics of it, and part of that is because it came up on our radar. It was passed. And then it was over with. I've never seen anything go through so blindingly fast through our molasses-slow state legislature. I mean, it was like a race car going through the Gold Dome, and suddenly it was passed. And so there's an incentive, I guess, to kind of look up the legislation and find out how, frankly, Republicans have figured out how to screw over the middle class or the poor people again in the state. But, you know, my outrage meter, I just can't do it. I mean, seriously, I'm scared of what I'm going to find in that bill because I've got 15 other bills that I have researched that are horrible. And so this one rocketing through so quickly, heck, I don't know what's in it. They don't even know what's in it. Maybe, you know what?
Yeah,
you guys
probably
know what's in it. You tell me because you
might
be the only people in the state.
Yeah, we do know that there's taxation on items purchased through the Internet. That was one.
Right.
There was some break for big business. But then they took out a break for, you know, making movies, which you could say is big business, too. So it's kind of like, you know, one big business is this and one big business is that, which seems like you'd want to stay consistent one way or the other. And there was a few other things. We've talked about them. Do you have any specifics you remember that we can ask Eric about?
Yeah, well, the thing about being taxed for all Internet sales, I was wondering how they were going to even police that. And another thing is, how are they going to police the thing about individuals selling automobiles to another individual and then paying a large fee for that, like the fee you would pay, say, if you bought a car at a car lot? How are they even going to police all of that? Have they given any explanation at all?
Not that I know of. Y'all might know something, but I don't know how you can police a private sale of a used car between two individuals and try and tack on, I think it's like 7% or 8%.
Yeah.
7%, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How are you going to police that among me and my neighbor?
Well, in Michigan they have that law, too. I mean, they have that law, like you pay basically like a sales tax when you buy a car from an individual. And you have to present your bill of sale when you get your car tags. But, you know, if you're buying a car from your mother-in-law, you just get a bill of sale that says $100 no matter how much you paid for it.
Right.
I mean,
so
I don't want
to lie about
not that I know anything
stuff.
About
right.
that because, of course, I've never had a mother-in-law, but you know, that's the kind of thing that goes on.
Well, again, so you're saying that someone who's goes through the trouble of this whole thing and puts out, I can print out a bill of sale on my computer, right?
I know.
And sign it, right? And so it's another way for people to get out paying taxes, and they're probably counting on that revenue stream in the future to make the budget look better. But you and I, we all probably agree that they're not going to be able to get a whole lot of that money because a lot of people can just fudge it by printing something up themselves saying they paid $200 sales tax when they actually didn't. I don't know how smart that is as far as tax policy, but man, oh man, the Republicans, when they start talking taxes, man, you got to grab your wallet.
Well, the thing is that the counterpoint to that is that it reduces the amount of taxes that car dealers have to pay. So there's some, isn't there, you guys? Didn't we talk about that last week? Like the destination taxes or something are lower for the car dealers. And so
yeah,
the car
usually
dealers.
In tax policy, there's some vested interest that wants something. In this case, it may be car dealers. And car dealers
right.
are going to have a lot more say and power and pull than just right. average people selling their car through the want ads or putting a for
well,
sale
Eric,
sign.
Eric, let me jump in with a question. I couldn't help but notice that this thing passed with practically no opposition at all. Why was there not more unified opposition to this thing in the legislature?
Well, that was a little surprising to me. I've seen some of our Democrats, you know, fight hard as a caucus to try and prevent some of this stuff from getting passed. And I didn't see that with this bill at all. So I really don't know. I'm a little perplexed, and I'd like to know more about it. And again, you know, I'll take some blame on this in that I don't know the circumstances behind it. But, you know, I'll also say this is some of the quickest legislation I've seen in 3 years of working, you know, in and around the Capitol. It took off quick. And frankly, Republicans probably, you know, snuck this one up on us because I didn't know it was coming up, and a lot of other people didn't.
Yeah. Well, Eric, I guess what we've had you for a little while. I just wanted to ask one more question. It was a little different. I know there's been some personnel changes over at the Democratic Party of Georgia. Can you just tell our listeners, because so many of them are Democrats and Georgia Democrats, how many people are currently at the Democratic Party of Georgia working hard for us?
Oh, right, that's going to take a second. I got to go through each one of my my offices here and figure out. Let me think here. We've got, I want to say, let's say five or six are full-time employees, and then we have another level of people who are part-time or don't work quite 40 hours. There's probably three people like that. So I'd say a total of eight, and then we've got, you know, dozens of volunteers that are scattered throughout the state, and then, you know, 300, 400 different state committee members. So as far as paid full-time staff, let's say six, which is a pretty reasonable estimate.
Okay. Well, I just said, you know, this is a part where we're raising money, and the Republicans are in the legislature, so time to fight some of the bills. So I think just some of our listeners were curious, and I was curious, so I thought I'd just ask you. Well, Eric, before I let you go, anything else you want to highlight?
Well, I just want to thank y'all for the hard work you guys do. I know putting together something like this every Sunday, you know, is a valuable resource, and I appreciate everything you guys do to bring attention to some of the political stuff here on the state level. I really do.
Okay, appreciate you again coming in.
Hey, thanks, y'all.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
Okay. Well, that was great having Eric, and that's going to leave us just enough time before Nate and Will from Naturally Blue call in, and we're going to play one of our games we like to play every so often. And we saw a piece on Political Wire where it talked about the Republican candidates and summing them up with one word. So we thought we'd do that too. Guys, we can start right at the top with, I guess, Mitt Romney, although some people in the South might say at the top with Rick Santorum. But we'll go ahead and start with Romney. Tim, sum Mitt Romney up in one word.
Well, you know, I have thought about that a lot, as a matter of fact, David. And he reminds me of George Bush Sr., Bush 41. And the word I would apply to both of them is detached. I just don't think Mitt Romney understands the problems of the everyday person and their struggles in this country. And I think he's made some gaffes to let that shine through. You know, we know what they all are, the $10,000 bets, and my wife drives just a couple of Cadillacs and that sort of thing, but I'd say the tax.
Okay, good one. Catherine, what about you and Mitt Romney?
Boring. I watched Bill Maher this weekend, and he did this little piece about Mitt Romney being the world's most boring man. He did a counterpoint to that, the world's most interesting man, to that beer commercial. So I just find him boring. I could fall asleep. He could be better than Charlie Rose to put you to sleep.
Yeah, and although he does give us some doozy quotes, but still sometimes in a boring way, so I don't think you're off base there. Mine was plastic. You know, you see the little figures like the Ken dolls and all that are perfect, but kind of too perfect to be real, and just but then almost has that stale quality to him. I just say plastic. And I guess you could also say fake, because a lot of times people associate fake and plastic together. Well, let's go ahead and move over, we'll say, instead of down the line. Rick Santorum. Kim, go ahead.
Okay, why do, now this is crazy, but why am I fixated on sweaters with this guy? Every time I look on TV, there he is, looking like something out of a bad Andy Hardy movie from the 40s, and you expect the chorus line of preppy guys to start dancing and singing behind him in sweater vests. Lose the sweater, man. Jeez, that's it, sweater.
Yeah. Catherine, what do you think?
I got to say scary. He scares me.
Yeah, scary popped up
really,
for me, too.
He really is scary to me. Like, when I hear him talk about women and I think scary because his ideas and the policies that he supports are really scary, but also the vision that he has for America, I think, is scary. So he scares me. Scary.
Yeah, scary was one of the ones I looked around with when I was brainstorming. But one that pops into mind, maybe kind of abstract for people who haven't seen the movie, I'm going to say Pleasantville. And if you've ever seen the movie, Pleasantville, that was the people go back in time in the TV, and they go into this 50s TV show, and they turn black and white. The way that the people in that town and in that show, most of them wanted to live life, that's how Rick Santorum wants to live life. You know, and maybe there's no color in life, but everything's just so generically perfect. So my word is Pleasantville. We'll keep moving through. Newt Gingrich. Now, Tim, a hearty laugh is not a word. Give us a word for you, Gingrich.
The word I'd like to apply to him is denial, because he's in it, folks. Why is this dude in the race? Does he not ever look at maps? Or is he still living 20 years ago, and he thinks somehow lightning's going to strike New? It's over, buddy. What else is he going to win? Get out of the race, dude. You are in denial.
Yeah, I'm kind of coming with another D word. Catherine?
Well, for me, it's like, I want to say professorial, but I want to, what he really, whenever I see him, it reminds me of, like, the worst college professor I ever had. And I think, oh, God, we're going to get quizzed on this, and it doesn't matter. So I don't know what that word is, but I'll use professorial.
That's not a bad one. I also, Tim, I was thinking delusional in there, but the one I want to do is have a hyphen in it, and that's self-serving. and not only in his political life is he self-serving, the way he treats his spouses is self-serving. I mean, it's very egocentric, me, me, me. Whatever's good for himself is what he'll do and say. And I just don't know how much he really cares about other people. I mean, just to be honest, the way he's treated at least two spouses already, and then everybody else around him, I mean, he's just very much for, you know, he's all about Newton. I guess, you know, everybody, you know, puts their name on the ballot has to have some ego, but he looks like he's got everybody's ego all wrapped into one. And the last one, the most underwhelming candidate this season, I think, is Ron Paul. Tim, sum up Ron Paul.
I am going to stun you there. The word that I would apply to Ron Paul that I would not apply to these other candidates would be honest, because I believe that in his heart of hearts, Ron Paul believes the stuff he's saying. What do you think about that, David?
Well, that's well, very you may be right. I mean, and I think Rick Santorum believes a lot of what he says. So, unfortunately, there's I think he does. I think he's straight out of Pleasantville. Catherine, what's your Ron Paul?
Well, mine is very similar to Tim's. I was going to say believer, because I think he's a believer. I think he, you know, whatever. You know, the other word, I guess if I could have two words, I'd say crazy believer. But I do think, I mean, I agree with Tim. I think what he espouses is what he believes. I don't think he's one to change his tune depending on who he's speaking to, which seems to be a theme with a couple of those candidates.
Yeah, with the plastic man. Well, I've got two phrases that are very similar. One, I guess you'd say cult of personality for Ron Paul. Another might be Jimmy Jeunesse. And the reason I say that is because not so much anything he's doing or saying, but the people that follow him. I'm telling you what, if there was a Ron Paul Kool-Aid, I'd be scared, because I believe there's some people that would buy it and drink it, wouldn't care. I mean, these folks that we see out at the East Rome Burger King in Rome every Friday, I mean, they're committed, and I'm not sure what they're committed to other than anything Ron Paul says. And I think this group is going to attach to Rand Paul in much the same way. And if you look at his Senate campaign, I mean, you had people, men beating up women because they believed in the Paul cause so deeply. Well, that's our word association game today. Let's go ahead and transition to our next guest. And I see this plural because it's my understanding that both Will and Nate that helped co-found Naturally Blue Pack in Arkansas are with us. Welcome, guys.
Hey, David. How are you today? This is Will Whiting, and Nate Looney's here as well. Nate, what's your
okay, good. Yes, I didn't know if you were on the same phone connection or if I was waiting for two numbers and which one of y'all I've gotten. But it's great to have you on the Cubs Divine. I guess the first thing is your story came to attention because it was reposted from the New York Times article, but it sounds like y'all have been in work a lot longer than just this week. Tell us about your organization and how it got started and what y'all are doing.
Sure. Well, it all started about 20 months ago, and we found ourselves in a series of conversations leading up to the last election cycle. Many of those same conversations you guys probably found yourself having in Georgia. But what Will and I took away from these conversations was that people were just so frustrated with the way politics has been happening around the state and around the South, and people were looking for a new alternative to the past approaches that have been going on. And literally over the course of a week, we probably had four or five conversations, basically the same conversation with different folks, and we walked away, and we just couldn't believe it. People were willing to, they're ready to throw in the white towel and basically say, as far as Southern Democrats are concerned, we have to run to the right and we just move away from the things that we believe in. And that really took us aback. And so we started traveling the state, we started having conversations with people, and we basically decided to start this political organization that's designed to try and get good people back involved in the process. And Will, why don't you add a little bit to that?
Yeah, sure. No, I think, you know, what Nate said is exactly right. We, from the conversations that we had with folks, both here in Arkansas and in other southern states, I grew up in South Alabama, and so we literally traveled the South. And, you know, the conversations were all the same. People are craving leadership right now. They're craving, you know, good people involved in the political process who are willing to stand up for what's right and what's wrong and not get bogged down in the whole right and left issue. And so for us, we sort of took those conversations to heart and started what has essentially become Naturally Blue PAC, which is, as you guys have already alluded to, a political action committee that has both a state and a federal arm of it.
Yes, now I kind of looked at it, and I, part of me wanted to say this looks like Democrats on steroids. How is that either accurate or inaccurate in what y'all are doing?
Well, you know, we're so proud of the work the Democratic Party is doing here in Arkansas and really across the nation right now. We're really gaining some traction. But what we're here to do is try to supplement those efforts. You know, Naturally Blue is really an organization that is designed to try to get good folks believing in the process again and really try to reinvigorate the Democratic Party in the South. We realize, though, for Democrats to be successful 15, 20, 25 years down the line, though, we have got to be competitive in all different levels. We have got to recruit stronger candidates. We have got to run smarter campaigns. And we've got to constantly reach new supporters. And we believe if we can do that, then we're not only going to see success on the state level, but we're going to be able to keep getting Democrats elected across the nation as well. And so our efforts that we're trying to do, they're very much in line with, you know, what's going on across the rest of the country, and that is trying to mobilize new supporters and constantly bring in new ideas, new energy, so that we're able to have an organization that truly reflects all the great minds that are out there.
Yeah, well, guys, I'm not the only. Oh, have something else to add?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not the only host on the show. I have Catherine Smith and Tim Shiflett here with me. Catherine, what are some questions you have for Nate and Will?
Well, thank you for stepping up and doing this. It sounds very exciting. I looked over your website, and I looked at the article in the New York Times that was in last week, and I think it sounds great. What kind of activities or what kind of things are you going to do to bring people back into the fold, so to speak, or get people energized about engagement again? Like, what are your, you know, sort of activities or plans?
Sure. And, Catherine, that's one of the biggest things that we have been focusing on over the last 20 months is how do we make our organization relevant and how do we make Naturally Blue an organization that's going to impact lives in a positive manner. And a lot of what we heard is or the ideas that we have developed, I mean, they're ideas that we've heard from people when we were traveling across the state. A couple of things that we noticed, and this is kind of what has really pushed our organization in the direction that it has become today, is that there's just a – we have a fundamental problem with Southern politics in that people constantly vote against their own interests. You see it time and time again, you know, people's families and, you know, their friends not showing up and supporting issues and after issues that might really impact their lives because they've fallen victim to the far right's fear tactics. And so what we have to be able to do as a party, if we're going to be able to get better people involved, we have got to go after some of the structural deficiencies that are currently existing out there. And so for us, there's a couple of things that we knew that we needed to be able to do if we're going to be competitive in the long run. We have got to recruit better candidates. That's the first thing. And what I mean by this, and you guys, I'm sure you've seen this some in Georgia as well, a lot of our best and brightest don't get involved in the process anymore. The ones that can make a huge difference, the ones that could really impact lives, they decide to do other things. A lot of them go into private business, which is great, but many of them do not enter the field of politics because they don't want to put their families through it. They don't want to, you know, engage in the political games. But for us to be successful as a state and as a region, as a country, we've got to get those people involved in the process again. The second thing that we want to be able to do is remove some of those hurdles that are out there for those good folks that are looking to get involved. And so we want to be able to provide them with the resources they need to be able to be successful. The third thing, though, and this is probably the most important thing that we're doing, is working with existing community groups that are out and already doing great things. registering voters, doing things that are going to be able to mobilize support, not only during the election cycle, but also when these folks are governing. And then the fourth thing that we're trying to really target is voter education. You're talking about folks voting against their own interests. Economic development, education, those are two issue areas that Democrats in Arkansas lose on. And that's unfortunate because we have great ideas. And you see our governor, Governor Mike Beebe, who's done extraordinarily well because he's focused on his two issues and he's been able to show that politics can impact the individual. And so he's been able to, go above and around some of the national politics that have, you know, infiltrated so many states because he's focused on issues that matter to people. And so we want to be able to also position Naturally Blue as a leader on progressive issues that are going to impact lives for the better around the South. So those four things are really what we're focusing on right now.
And I think those are great. I wholeheartedly support that. But I think everyone would agree that those are four important things. But what I'm asking is, how are you going to do it? Just for one example, how do we get good candidates to run for office? How do we recruit good candidates?
Sure. Okay. So right now, that's one of the most important things. Already, we just had our close of filing for state offices earlier this month, or last month, excuse me, end of last month. And already we know there are districts that we've identified based on numbers that we can win. But because people are hesitant to get involved, we're going to have to develop a new approach. It can't be calling these folks at the very last hour trying to get them to file. It takes building relationships. And in Arkansas, and I think in a lot of southern states as well, we've been very fortunate to have great leaders. You know, names that come to my mind, Senator David Pryor, Dale Bumpers, Bill Clinton from Arkansas. These are folks that were able to move people because they had personal relationships. And the same thing goes with candidate recruitment. So we've identified those districts, and we're already working with folks throughout the state to try to determine who are the best and brightest and start figuring out ways that we can get them in the game. Whether that's 2014, whether that's 2016, whether that's 2018, we've got to constantly be going after these folks. And so we've endorsed one candidate right now, and we're very excited about her. Her name is Diana Gonzalez-Worthen. She's a veteran educator. She has taught in the classroom for 15 years, owned her own small business, and she's running in a district that is 40% minority, 25% of which is Latino vote. And we're really excited about the burgeoning Latino population in the state. And that group right now, there's several groups doing tremendous things. So we've endorsed Diana. We've been going out working with her. We're going to provide her resources financially. We're also linking her up with folks throughout the rest of the state that can help her strategize and raise other financial means to be successful. And so we're really wanting to be able to make an impact on a grand scale here. But Diana is the perfect race because she's somebody that isn't necessarily the person that would get involved in politics. But because we were able to approach her and had conversations and other members of the community had conversations with her, she's going to be very competitive. And I think she's going to make history in becoming our state's first Latino state senator. And so we're the recruiting candidates in the running and endorsements and providing help beyond just, you know, cutting checks to candidates. That's what we're about.
That sounds great. I'm going to turn it over to Tim.
Yes, sir. You have said publicly that you want to take on Republicans in areas where they assume they're going to win. Are you talking here at the statewide level, or does this drift down to the congressional district or even the local level? What are we talking about when we say areas?
Thanks. And is this Tim? Is this right?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thanks, Tim. Northwest Arkansas is an area that has been growing at the fastest pace of any other area in the state. Since 1966, though, there's been a Republican in that congressional seat. Bill Clinton ran for that seat in 74, actually, and it was one of the closest that anybody's ever come to winning that. But since that time, Democrats, we haven't done anything to build infrastructure, to run candidates, or do anything to be competitive there. And so for us, we're looking to compete in Northwest Arkansas because that foundation hasn't been there, but so much of the power is being controlled there now. And so for us, we want to compete on, yes, on the focus on the state house and state senate races, but we're also a federal PAC as well. And so not in 2012, but in 2014, 2016, 2018, we hope to be able to compete on the federal level and provide resources and support to people running for office in Arkansas and across in other states as well. But right now we're just focusing on keeping Arkansas state house and state senate blue.
Okay. Now, to win statewide in Arkansas or anywhere else in the South for that matter, you will need, of course, to attract rural white conservative-leaning voters that, frankly, in recent elections have been voting en masse for Republican candidates. How will an organization that calls itself a progressive organization be able to reach out and appeal to this type of voter?
Tim, this is Will. That's a great question, and thank you for asking it. You know, I think that one of the things we've realized about Arkansas, and not just in Arkansas, I think this is true for any state across the South and certainly any state in the country for that matter, politics used to be about relationships. So it didn't matter at the end of the day who was sitting across the table from you. If you had a relationship with that person, you usually could get over whatever difference you might have. And so for us, we've said from the get-go that Naturally Blue is about, you know, reestablishing what it means to have relationships in politics. And we believe that that's a good first step in overcoming that challenge that you just mentioned. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. That pretty much gets it. I have one final question, then I'm going to throw it back to David. And it's for you, Will, as a matter of fact. There have been those who have charged that you actually have a conflict of interest because of your work with the Little Rock Chamber of Commerce. I'm sure you've heard these charges thrown at you. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to refute those charges or talk about them, if you would.
Sure, no, and thank you for asking that question. You know, I'll be very honest with you. I don't think that there's a conflict of interest at all. I'm very proud of the work that I do in my role at the chamber, but you know, for me, my outside projects working with Naturally Blue is on my own time, and it's what I do. You know, I think one of the things that people who look at our financial records after we file our first financial report at the end of this month, in Arkansas, state PACs are required to file quarterly. You know, I think we'll show that that the majority of our contributions are $50 or less. And so for those deep pockets that were referenced in the article, I think that folks will be pleasantly surprised to find out that our support is coming from far and wide. But we're focusing on more of a grassroots movement where we build support by, you know, quantity and the number of people that we recruit to be a part of this effort, as opposed to, you know, some of those large dollar contributions that may have been referenced on different blogs or things like that. You know, the focus for our PAC, you know, our focus is that we're going to show the world that we're a progressive PAC. And we're very excited about that. Personally, I'm very excited about it. I think it's the right thing to do. And so, you know, I don't think there's a conflict of interest at all.
Okay. Thank you, sir. David?
Yes. Well, Will or Nate, I just wanted to ask you a structural question here. Let's say somebody's listening to this show in Mississippi or Louisiana, Georgia, I'm sure they're listening, probably pretty much in every southern state, at least one person's listening. I'll download this podcast. If they hear this and they say, you know, I want to do that same thing in my state, should they, like, call you up and then y'all are going to eventually try to expand? Or two, is it kind of like a franchise model where you'll say, hey, you've got to do it in your state, but you can still use the exact template we've laid out? Or three, do you see where people would need to just like, hey, here's what we did, but it needs to be yours. It needs to be right for Kentucky, right for Georgia. Which of those three models would be best to bring your concept to a different state?
Dave, that's a great question, and thank you for asking it. I think we've said from the very beginning, this is something that is very important for us on many levels because we believe that it has the potential to really do some good across the South. With that said, we want anybody, wherever they're at, and by whatever means they can, to do all that's in their power to keep the South blue or to turn it blue once again. And so naturally blue, we do want to expand. We want to have an impact in all states. But it's more important what you said at the end. It has to be organic. It has to be natural. We can't pretend to have all the ideas in Little Rock. What we do have, though, is a lot of time, a lot of energy, and the will to connect with people wherever they're at and figure out what will work in their state. And so if somebody's interested in seeing Naturally Blue be able to play in Louisiana or Mississippi or Tennessee or Georgia or anywhere else that desires strong leadership, then we want to be a part of it. With that said, we're not gonna do anything that would complicate things or make it more difficult for progress to be made. And so we want to be a resource wherever we're at, and we would love to be able to get in contact with those folks. And we can, if we have a spot on our website, www.wearenaturallyblue.com, there is a spot where you can send us an information request. And as soon as you send that in, we'll be happy to get back with you and talk about how we can make this work wherever you're at.
Good to know. Well, I just knew that a lot of times if something works, people are going to come to you and want to see how they can accomplish it in their state. And obviously, if you look at your website and what's on there and what the New York Times printed, you have had some tangible successes. Well, also, when I talked to Will about coming on the show, we mentioned talking a little Arkansas politics. And if you're like us, you love to talk, you know, any kind of politics, particularly in your home state. So I'm going to throw out the first question. And that would be, in your state, you've got a Democratic governor, a Democratic House and Senate, and a Democratic Senator, Mark Pryor, and so many other states throughout the South are just all Republican. And they really went that way this past time. Both Georgia, Alabama, and South Carolina went all Republican. Louisiana just went all Republican. How has Arkansas managed to keep electing so many Democrats? And you even contrast that to the presidential level, where Arkansas seemingly went backwards in 2008 from 2004. What's the local secret?
That's a great observation. I think Will hit on this a little bit earlier, the importance of having relationships. Senator Dale Bumpers, whenever he was basically in a small town in Arkansas before he got his major political upstart, there was this controversial issue that came across all southern cities, integration. And Charleston School District was the first district in the state to integrate. If you recall, Little Rock has a bad history of the Little Rock Nine and FAVIS not allowing students to be able to enter. Well, this school district in Charleston had none of those problems because Dale Bumpers at the time, a young upstart attorney, said, you know what, this issue is not about, you know, right or left or white or black. It's about what's right or wrong. And he was able to connect with people in a way that made them believe him. And he said, you know, basically it's one of those things where if people can connect and they can see beyond the fear that's constantly thrown around in politics today, then you got a shot at having success. But you got to have them pay more attention than just the 30 seconds they hear on Fox News or on CNN or MSNBC. And so that's why the relationship piece is so important. So for us, I think that's a big key to that. I was curious, though, maybe about how it looks in Georgia right now. I know that the breakdown in the state house and the state senate is pretty wide. I think there's 115 to 62 in the state house. What's going on in Georgia right now? How are you guys working to defeat all this?
Well, it's really not good at all because the Republicans controlled redistricting. They gained the advantage under originally Democratic maps. Then they re-redistricted around 2004 or 2005 after they finally took control of everything. And it's just gotten so bad. I mean, they almost – had enough wins and party switchers to get a veto-proof supermajority if they wanted to pass bills. There's a lot of demographic changes around the Atlanta area, like one of the largest three counties in our state. Gwinnett County is becoming more Democratic. So there will be some wins here and there, but it's really being able to add numbers in places outside of Metro Atlanta where demographics aren't just changing. We actually have to have some wins where we change minds, not change who lives in the houses, if you will. And so figuring out that plan is going to be the trick. Wouldn't y'all agree, Catherine and Tim?
Yes, absolutely. I was going to throw out a question to you guys. With the election coming up, what is priority number one for your group in the election in Arkansas this year?
We would like to be able to support 3 to 5 candidates in Northwest Arkansas and do 3 to 5 throughout the rest of the state. And so support means, it's a broad term here. It means, first and foremost, being introduced to these folks and make sure our relationship's right and we trust the people that we're endorsing. But beyond that, though, is we want to open then our network up. And so hopefully we can be a signpost to people around the country that care about progressive issues to have a mechanism to be able to contribute. And so it's symbolically, we were talking just about earlier with what David was saying. Symbolically, if we can go and win in Northwest Arkansas, this is kind of the lion's den of conservative thought in our state, then we can do it anywhere. We can do it throughout the rest of the state, and we can get progressives elected across the South. Just a matter, though, of being able to show people that if you select your races wisely, and you have the right candidates in the game, then you can have success no matter where you're at. And that goes back to the authenticity piece and the relationship piece to all this as well. And so it's supporting candidates, not just financially, but also providing them with the resources they need to be able to have success during the campaign.
Okay, thank you.
Catherine, we got time for about one more question. If you've got a question for Will and Nate on Arkansas politics, go ahead with it.
Are you – I know this is probably a hot question. I might not be able to be answered quickly, but how do you envision your group in terms of the presidential campaign? Are you ignoring that? Is that, you know, some for Obama for America folks to do, or do you expect to engage in some way, or like
we're not plan? As an organization, we're not going to be getting involved in the presidential election this year. We've got to be focused on keeping our state legislature blue. In 2010, Republicans saw the largest gain that we've ever seen here in Arkansas, in the state house and the state senate. To be able to keep the state senate, we have to be able to win 9 out of 16 contested races. To be able to keep the state house, we have to be able to win 25 out of 48 state house races. And so we've got our work cut out here, and that's where all our efforts are going to be. That's where we're going to be focusing on.
I think that's great. I think that focusing on state races is really important, and I think in presidential years, a lot of times we don't do enough of that. So, bravo.
Well, thanks, Catherine. We appreciate it.
We do.
You know, individually, yeah. I'm a huge supporter of the president. And,
oh, absolutely.
And I want to do it.
Oh, yeah, so am I. Absolutely.
Own capacity to try to help that out. But, yeah, I think we got our work cut out for us, and we have to do everything in our power to try to make sure that Arkansas is well represented by Democrats in 2012 after this cycle.
Well, guys, let me jump in with one more quick question before David grabs it back to close it out. That is an ambitious agenda that you have, and unfortunately, an ambitious agenda requires funding. They don't call it the mother's milk for nothing. And I've heard you say that you are largely financed right now through small donations. Will your organization be able to pursue such an ambitious agenda as this, existing mostly or solely on small donations?
I think so. You know, Tim, I think it's important for us to always go back to what that core philosophy of the organization kind of has. That's constantly going after new people and bringing in new energy and new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in line with our fundraising as well. I mean, I tell you, we've been blown away since this New York Times article has come out. The small dollar donations we've received from all across the country, $10 in California, $25 in Texas, $30 in New Mexico. And that's great. That the money is important. That's going to be a driving force for all this. And I think it will continue to keep coming in. But what's more moving than the money, I think what's ultimately going to make this organization successful in the long run, are the notes that we got that are attached to those donations. People, for the first time in a long time, they felt like they had something they could believe in. They felt like they were a part of something. And as long as we can keep this about people making a difference, meeting folks wherever they're at, whether you got $5 or $500 to contribute, we want to get you involved. Whether you got 5 minutes or 50 hours a week to contribute, we want to get you involved. And as long as we can stay true to that mission, I think that we'll have success in the long run.
Excellent answer. You just made a believer out of me. Let me go back to David on that one. David?
Well, very true. Now, Nate and Will, if somebody's heard you tonight or they hear you on the podcast later and they say, man, I want to find out more about that group, I want to donate a small contribution or large, how could they find you?
Well, that's a great question. Our website is probably the easiest way for people to get in touch with us. Folks can make donations to Naturally Blue directly through our website. We are naturallyblue.com. They can also fill out an information request if they want to, you know, talk to us individually. We'll be happy to call or email back anyone who sends in a request. Or they can email us directly at blue@wearenaturallyblue.com. And, of course, we also utilize social media, Facebook, Naturally Blue, Twitter, @NatBluePack. And we're always happy to make new friends and have new followers. And we appreciate the opportunity that you guys have given us tonight to be able to, you know, spread our message to folks across the South and across the nation.
Yeah. Well, guys, we thank you for coming in. Don't forget to tweet it and post out that y'all have been on tonight so people can hear you and connect to face or print with your voices.
We'll be happy to do it. Thank you so much for having us, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Sure thing.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Have a good week.
And I bet we went a minute or two into record time, but the podcast people, they're getting it nevertheless. So for March 25th, 2012, this has been the Kudzu Vine. Good evening.
Good night,
everybody.
Guys.